Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
Welcome to a bonus episode of the Iditapod. I'm Casey Grove, and now that we have your attention with the Iditarod, let's talk climate change. No, seriously, I know it's all existential and whatnot, but like a lot of things in the North, our warming climate is affecting the last great race. There are some nuances, however, and to suss it all out, we brought in our resident climatologist, Brian Brettschneider, with the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Brettschneider joins us regularly on Alaska News Nightly for our Ask a Climatologist segment. He says regarding the Iditarod and sea ice, or the lack thereof, out on the coast, that a confluence of factors led to historic low sea ice in the Bering Sea this spring. The latest value out from official sources is 185 to 190,000 square kilometers of ice. Brettschneider says the reason mushers are just seeing waves lapping at the shores instead of solid ice is that is about a quarter of what it should be, and the Bering Sea ice is mostly on the Russian side. Here's Brian Brettschneider.
What is a warming climate going to do to the Iditarod? For the most part, we've talked about warming temperatures and less snow. For a variety of factors, you know, the time period where the Iditarod occurs in early to mid-March, we've kind of hung in there. You know, it's still kind of the core part of winter. But the spring meltout, you know, is getting earlier across all of Alaska. River breakup is getting earlier across all of Alaska. And that kind of line, that end of winter marking point is trending earlier. So far, we're okay with it not overlapping with the Iditarod time. But it's getting closer. What's happened in the Bering really has come out of nowhere. We didn't see this coming. So even in warm years, so for example, in 1989, we had a parade of storms roll through the Bering Sea, probably the warmest February on record for most of Alaska. But we still had over 500,000 square kilometers of ice at the end of February. This year, a very, very similar pattern, not quite as warm, and we have less than half that amount of ice. And so really what happens then early in the season matters too. We can't just look at it and say, oh, we had bad luck in February.
So we have record low sea ice, but when you look at the Iditarod in particular, and you look at the data, what do you see?
So in the last, you know, so the Iditarod's been running for over 40 years now, and we've actually had some of our coldest Marches on record in the last 40 years, and some of the places from Anchorage all the way to Nome have had some really good snow years. Of course, some really poor snow years as well. So far we've held on, and without having too much impact on the overland portions based on climate change. But again, the day of reckoning is coming, because freeze-up is getting later in the fall, breakup is getting earlier in the spring, and that affects things like the river ice and the prevalence of open leads and, you know, and that kind of safety for travel between rural communities.
And you said it's kind of a nuanced thing. I mean, you can look at March and you can look at what the temperature is and what the snowfall for the season is. Mm-hmm. But if you've got sort of a condensed winter and less time to train, maybe that's going to affect mushers. And then certainly specific regions may be being affected more than others. They're going to have a harder time getting out there with their dogs. And anecdotally, I mean, they say, you know, at different points along the way in this year's race that the trail's been real warm. It was definitely above freezing at some points, and that will make for slow going in a race. Backing up again just from the race, what caused all this? How did this set up this season, and what led to having this record low sea ice this year, and what does that mean for us going forward?
So the first kind of building block of this story is, you know, the last 4 years globally have been the warmest 4 years on record. So we're starting at a warm baseline everywhere, and the part of the ocean, you know, south of the Alaska Peninsula, you know, the North Pacific, has been at or near record warmth for the last few years. So we've really primed the pump. You know, we've got all this warm background temperature. We've got this warm water. And now we just need to throw a little bit of bad luck on top of it. And our bad luck this year is a persistent southerly flow that's advected warm water and warm air from more southerly latitudes. Again, if this had been a normal year with a normal set up before February, the southerly wind would have pushed less warm air and less warm water, and the ice would be in much better condition.
Just year after year, kind of depleting more, right, and getting lower sea ice.
And it really is the temperature of the water is kind of the big wild card. You know, if you're starting with water that's 40 degrees at the end of the fall, you need a lot of cold air to remove that heat from the water to get it down to freezing. If you're starting at 36 degrees, then the water doesn't have as much heat that it has to be released, and it can start freezing quicker. So with the same amount of cold air today versus 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, we get less ice formation. To have now a good ice year requires unusually persistent north winds, something that would have caused historic ice in the past, now would cause good ice or normal ice this year.
Going back to the Iditarod, definitely some of the race's biggest sponsors are producers of fossil fuels. And I'm not going to ask you what you think about that particular irony, but I do want to ask, is there any question at this point that burning fossil fuels is contributing to climate change?
There's complete uniform consensus. Burning fossil fuels releases carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. It's a really straightforward relationship that carbon dioxide absorbs long-wave radiation leaving the Earth's surface. It's middle school science. You can construct a science experiment to demonstrate this very, very easily. So there really is no question at all that burning fossil fuels adds carbon dioxide and traps heat. And I think really the only questions that you hear some people discuss is to what extent, and then how do other factors come into play with circulations and clouds and so on. But the basic science of greenhouse gases absorbing heat, that's why they're called greenhouse gases, because they absorb heat. So there's no discussion or debate about that among the science community.
And that's where we're going to have to leave off. Brian, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks, Casey.
That was University of Alaska Fairbanks climatologist Brian Brettschneider here with a special Iditarod edition of our Ask a Climatologist segment.
Thanks for listening to that interview. I'm Casey Grove. Please stay tuned for another episode of The Iditapod.
At this point, I mean, is there any question in the science that fossil fuels and burning fossil fuels is not contributing to climate change?
There's complete uniform consensus.
Let me say that one more time because I said it wrong. Is there any question at this point in the science that is there any point? Is there any question at this point that burning fossil fuels is contributing to climate change? Check, 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 check. We are a little hot on the mic, a little hot on the mic. If you talk loudly, if you get excited about things like the Iditarod, we are coming to you live from a sort of a pillow fort, a blanket fort, really, under my table, my table at home. I'm going to try not to pop the P's too much or S up the S's. I'm your host, Casey Grove. I'm tired, a little bit hungry, but you know, we do this because it's a labor of love. Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of the Iditapod. I'm Casey Grove, and now that we have your attention with the Iditarod, let's talk climate change.